From one islander to another, Isle of Wight Radio proudly presents John Hannam Meets.
Hi and welcome to another John Hannam Meets archive. Today I'm going back to 2003 when I went to the home of Brian Forbes and his lovely wife Nanette Newman. I did an interview with Brian and rather discreetly I'd also done quite a lot of research on Nanette just in case. So we're going back to 2003.
John Hannam Meets from the archive.
Nice to meet you, Nanette.
Nice to meet you.
We ought to say I came out to interview your wonderful husband, Brian Forbes, and we were just leaving. And I said to you, any chance one day, Nanette, I could come up and talk to you? And you said, well, if you're very quick, I've just put a cake in the oven. If we can get there before the cake finishes, you're on.
And if it's burnt, you see, I blame you.
Yes, all right. I like to go right back. Italia Conti in the early days for you, wasn't it?
Yes.
Was that a dream come true, really?
Well, I don't know about a dream, but my parents were both in variety. So I didn't really think of doing anything else. I knew I was going to train to be a dancer. So I started work basically when I was about 12. I was at Conti's and, you know, did various jobs, various children's films, advertisements, Where the Rainbow Ends. I don't know if you ever remember that.
Yes.
100 years ago, that was the great show that Conti's put on every year. And I was sort of basically geared to become a dancer. And then I won a scholarship to RADA.
Mm. Rather posh, RADA, wasn't it?
Rather posh. And my father thought, well, it's a scholarship. Better not turn it down. You'd better go. So off I went. And in those days, RADA was 2 years, not three. So I did 2 years there, met Brian, and then got married and sort of continued from there.
Let's just go back to your folks being in variety, because my interest in the theatre, which has been lifelong, really began in the sort of, early 50s, when I went to see Variety at Portsmouth. And that was a special thing, wasn't it, Variety? Some great stars, really, weren't there?
Well, there were. I suppose, basically, it was because television hadn't eaten up so much talent, you know, because once your act is on television, you can't really do it again, or you can't do it for a long time, or you have to change your material. In those days, when my father was in Variety, he had an adagio act, but so that could remain pretty constant. But in those days, a comedian would go round all the theatres in England just getting his act absolutely right. And of course, by the time he came back to where he started, there were a whole new audience and people had forgotten all the terrible jokes and everything. But yes, it was very interesting. I think television killed variety, don't you, really? It must have done, because people could suddenly see those things on their television screen and they didn't want to go out and see a sort of potpourri of different acts anymore.
I loved it when the numbers came up. They flashed on the side of the stage, you know, 1, 2, 3, 4. There was 14 acts or whatever. No one was on very long. They were all on just for a few minutes. And the top of the bill probably did only about 15 minutes.
Yes, the great thing was either to be the top or the bottom of the bill. Those were the two good places. And really touring. My father toured, and you stayed in terrible digs. I remember as a little girl going with my father and watching from the side of the stage. In fact, I actually watched Morecambe and Wise when I was a little girl.
Did
and
you?
My father was on the bill with them. And they reminded me, I guested on their Christmas special show.
Yeah.
The last show that they did. And it was very funny because I said to them, I stood on the side and watched. They said, I remember you didn't laugh. And I don't think I thought they were funny then because I was too little. But they were some great acts. And touring and getting your act really right was very, very important.
Was it scary going on their TV show? Because you knew they were going to set you up, really, didn't you? Or...
Oh, yes. Yeah. It was scary and flattering and so thrilling, because just to watch them work, it is quite a treat, was quite a treat. You know, it was It was something that I enjoyed doing enormously, and it was with Nigel Hawthorne, and we often used to stay and watch them rehearse.
So he married Brian in 1954, I think, wasn't it?
Yes.
He talked about sort of nepotism. People have said, oh, she's always in your films, but he reckoned you only did about seven of the movies he made, I think.
I think I did. I mean, it is nepotism, isn't it, really?
I don't know.
Well, it is. I mean, you have to eventually face up to it. It was wonderful in one way because Brian only cast me in things that hopefully I could cope with and be okay in. And it was a wonderful way to be together. And we enjoyed it. And, you know, the film industry is very curious. I think once you stop enjoying it, it's time to get out. And for those years that we were doing those things, we had a great time. We went to lots of different countries, acted with a lot of marvellous, marvellous people. And it was very enjoyable.
Looking at the list, L-Shaped Room, Raging Moon, League of Gentlemen, Wrong Box, Whisperers, Deadfall, International Velvet, Seance, Stretford Wives. Got one or two favourites particularly of the films that your husband was involved with? Obviously you won awards for The Raging Moon, didn't you, in International
Yes,
Velvet.
We did. Raging Moon was interesting because it was a very small film made with very little money. And we all, everybody took a great cut in their salaries and we shot it all in one house. And Malcolm McDowell, who I think, I don't know if you'd agree, but I thought he was so wonderful in it. And that has a special place in my heart because when it came out in England, nobody really knew quite what to do with it. And when it came out, it had rave notices, won great awards, and then it went to New York. And we opened, I seem to remember, on a Jewish holiday in a snowstorm. And we rang the people who'd put the film on and said, look, why don't you save yourself some money, save our hotel bill, send us home, because obviously this is a nightmare. You know, New York is covered in snow. It's a holiday and all this. And they said, why don't you go and look at the queues? It was such an exciting moment. And suddenly there we were with really rather a special success. So because it started from nothing and it was a lot of people hoping it would be good and giving their all for very little financial reward, the end result was particularly thrilling, I think.
Now, Nana, was he tough with you sometimes? Did he get cross on movie sets?
I've only heard him have one or two strops on various occasions where I've sort of sunk into the background and thought, oh.
But he never told you off.
Don't want to be part of it. No, because I think he knew with me that I'd dissolve and be so desperate. No, he didn't get cross with me. He's a very good woman's director. All the women that he's ever directed, they all seem to have won awards, and, you know, Kim Stanley, Dame Edith Evans, and Kate Hepburn have all liked being directed by him. Some directors have that quality that makes women respond, and I think it was the same for me.
I'm Fenella Fielding, and whenever I can, I listen to John Hannah Meets.
I want to briefly mention one or two other movies. I already said to Brian that I was a great fan of Tony Hancock, and you were in The Rebel with him, weren't you? Really?
I was, yes.
Yeah. Probably he never came over on the movies like he did on TV.
I don't think he did. No. And I think he knew that. He was wonderful to me. I adored him. He was never anything but nice to me, but he had the reputation for being very depressed. And I think he always wanted, really, to be a straight actor, which he could never be. But his amazing television and radio personality, I don't think worked so well in films. But I think The Rebel was a reasonable success, and it crops up every now and again.
Yes, it does.
Doesn't it? Suddenly, there it is.
And I think The Punch and Judy Man was on quite recently, which was another film you made with Sylvia Sims, I think.
I think he did, yes.
Man at the Top, that was a good movie for you, wasn't it, really?
Yes, it was. Gosh, it's a long time ago. Yes, I enjoyed doing that.
That was a sort of one of those sort of new style British movies in a way, wasn't it?
Yes, it was meant to be sort of hard-hitting and very realistic. And yes, it was a very interesting movie to make.
When you look back, things like Oh, What a Lovely War, that was sort of a movie and a stage show, still talked about, isn't it, today, really?
Oh, What a Lovely War, Dickie Attenborough's film, yes. Oh, yes, that's my favourite film that Dickie ever made. I thought that was stunning. Yeah. I don't know if you've seen it recently, have you?
No.
I happened to see it about a year ago, and it stands up so well, and it was so beautifully shot, and I think a superb film.
Wrong Arm of the Law too, that was another of yours, wasn't it?
It was, with dear old Peter Sellers.
I know.
And a cast of you know, like Lionel Jeffries, Graham Stark, all those English actors that people got to know almost like a repertoire.
We don't seem to have the same today. We have a few, don't we? But not as many.
No. I think the person who does use a lot of the same actors is Kenneth Branagh, who uses a lot of the actors that he's worked with, knows that they're going to give a good performance, like he used Richard Briers and a lot of people. So he has that kind of thing, and I'm a great fan of his. I think he's totally brilliant. And I think when he makes a film, he rather does look around to a group of actors that he's worked with a lot before.
A film which you may not even remember. We have a pop singer called Craig Douglas who was discovered on the Isle of Wight, and he sang in a movie called The Painted Smile in a nightclub. Very low-budget thing, was it? Do you remember it? It must have been about 1960, 61, something like that.
I just about remember it. I couldn't tell you what it was about.
I think it was almost a sort of B-movie. It wasn't really a main movie.
And I think it was a kind of thriller, wasn't it?
It was, yeah.
Yes.
A long time ago.
Obviously not a memorable film. No. Both of us are having difficulty remembering it at all.
I know you decided not to do too many films because you brought up your family, didn't you? Obviously, that was a decision which was simple for you in a way, wasn't it? Because that's what you wanted.
Well, it was. I mean, I wanted us all to be together. I didn't want to be one of those actresses who was away endlessly from my children. Not because they wouldn't have done very well. They, you know, children can cope with parents being away. But I really needed them. I didn't want to be away from them. I didn't want to miss all those growing up years. And so I very much fitted my work in with my home life. And we always went with Brian when he was making a film and set up home wherever we were, took the children out of school. Not that I recommend that to everybody, but sent them to school in different countries, which they say they loved and seemed to benefit from. But the family thing has always been very important to me, and I'm happy to say now that we're still a very close family.
Were you surprised when Emma decided to go into showbiz? You weren't really, were you?
Well, I wasn't really surprised. First of all, you know, she trained for ballet and she wanted to be either a great ballet dancer or marry Baryshnikov. I think one of those two things. And she was so good. And then she had an accident to her leg and spiral fractured her tibia and fibula and, you know, those two twirly bits in your leg and couldn't really dance properly anymore. She didn't have the strength in her leg. She then tried lots of things. And when she went into doing a little bit of television here and there and in odd places, I looked at her and I thought, my goodness, you're good, because she was so natural and so funny. She was completely at ease. And so I always felt she'd do well. And when she got the job of on Live and Kicking, which she'd auditioned for about seven times, on about the seventh audition, I rang her and I said, oh, darling, this business is a nightmare. Put it behind you. Forget it. Obviously, you know, it's not going to happen this time, but so. And that same day she got the job. So I thought she was marvellous on that. And she's now doing, as you know, she's on Heart Radio every day. And so I listened to her and I think she's very good on that.
That sort of show, Saturday Mornings, was a show which adults sort of found time to watch as well. It set a new trend in sort of young people's programmes, don't you
think? Well, it was an intelligent programme. It was funny. It was outrageous. Children responded to it in all the ways that you want a child to respond to a programme. But it also, it didn't talk down to them. It wasn't coy or twee. It wasn't silly. And I think parents felt, oh, there's something I can leave them in front of the television knowing that they're watching something that's good. And it was a very successful programme that went on for many years, as you know.
Yes, I came to the Isle of Wight once or twice because she came on this particular show several years ago with Philip Schofield when they came to the Needles.
That's right, I do remember.
And
that.
There was some.
Yes, they did a thing from there, didn't they?
Yes,
on
they
a
did.
Boat or something.
And they cooked some fish, and I think the fish they gave them was off before they cooked it.
Well,
I think you could never tell, but apparently it didn't smell very nice.
One of her great major cooking disasters.
John Hallam, host of British Radio's longest-running non-stop chat show. This is Your Life.
I'm with Nanette Newman. At very short notice, I might add, and the cake's going on okay, I think, at the moment.
Yes,
I'm
absolutely.
Watching the time.
Watch it for me.
Talk a bit about television. You've done quite a bit of television. You did Jessie, which was a TV movie, I think, wasn't
yes,
it?
Yes, loved doing that. I think it's one of the best things Brian and I ever did together. And I still love that. You know, it's curious, isn't it, in this business, you sometimes look at things you've done and you think, oh, that is so grotesque and so awful. I don't know how I can hold my head up or how awful that keeps cropping up and it's so dreadful. But Jessie, I am a little bit proud of because I thought it was one of the best things Brian did, and I thought it was one of the best things that I did. And it was a very happy experience, that.
Let There Be Love?
I adored doing that, yes. Mm. That was great. Yes, I loved it. I loved doing a comedy series because, well, I was working with Paul Eddington.
He was terrific, wasn't he, Paul Eddington?
Yes, yeah. Quite very special man and a wonderful comedy actor. And sad that he's not with us anymore because I think he had such a unique talent. He would have gone on and on to even better things.
I know when you were in movies, people recognised you, but when you do an actual sitcom on television, you find sometimes a new sort of fan base in a way, don't you? Get recognised by different sorts of people, really.
Yes. I think you do that with everything you do, and I think particularly television, people get to know you very well, and because you're in their room, aren't you? You know, I've done that sometimes. I walked along the King's Road the other day and shouted hello to some man who looked round, went hello, and I said, how are you? And he said, fine, you? I said, great, lovely to see you. And then I thought, who was that? And it was one of the newscasters that I'd never met in my life before. I just watch him every day on the news. And obviously he thought vaguely he knew me. You know, that's the power of television, isn't it?
Do you remember an actor called Tony Adams, who was Adam Chance in Crossroads?
Yes.
He's a good mate of mine. And one day he was going on a train from Southampton to London. And he got into this carriage and he sat with this guy and he thought, I know you from somewhere. And he got chatting, have we worked together? And he realised halfway to London it was Sir Edward Heath. You know, and he said the guy wasn't very friendly.
I don't think I know you.
So you never know, do you?
No.
Late Expectations, that was another TV thing
he
did.
Yes, yeah. And that was with Keith Barron, who's wonderful.
Oh, yes.
Keith is one of the funniest people. And on and off the screen, and we were always laughing. He is terrific to work with.
He was a lucky guy because in all the years ago, in all the series he had, he was a womanizer, wasn't he? So all the women fell for him.
And yes, that's right.
He was perfect for the roles, wasn't he? Really?
Yes. Very, very good actor and a real charmer to work with.
Stay With Me Till Morning. That was another.
Yes, that was another. Well, that was three 1 hours, I think, wasn't it? Or three.
I think
and
so.
Half hours.
Yeah.
Yes.
Yeah.
And of course, that was with Keith again. And with a wonderful actor called Paul Daneman, who I'm Paul Daneman, who sadly again is no longer with us. But yes, that was, and we shot that in Yorkshire,
did
all
you?
Over on location, and beautiful locations. So that was interesting to do.
And there's something completely different. Your own show called Fun Food Factory, I think, wasn't it?
Fun Food Factory.
Yeah.
Yes. But, well, that basically came about because I'd written a cookery book for children. And I got my own programme, sort of teaching children to cook. And the idea was that this was a factory that produced wonderful, healthy food to keep children healthy, but made it fun so that children learnt about vitamins and all sorts of things, which were made into characters. And I had two children on each programme teaching them how to cook various things. And that was a lot of fun.
Put that light out!
I'm trying to relax and listen to John Hannum.
I briefly mentioned in Brian's conversation you won awards for Raging Moon and International Velvet. That must have been great for your career, really.
Yes, I think winning awards is always... I don't think it necessarily means very much. It doesn't mean that you're better or... It just is a matter of luck. Because it's a nice boost, I suppose, because we're in a career that you get a lot of criticism and a lot of things thrown at you, and sometimes you think you've done something very good and all the critics hate it and say you're ghastly and terrible. So every now and again, if something like that, if you get an award or something, it you just think, oh, quite nice little pat on the back. But... awards are strange things, really. I think they don't really mean much other than for a couple of days you just walk around thinking, oh, this is a nice day.
Well, you sold over 1 million books. Did you know that? I'm sure you did. Well, over a million books.
I think that was with my first book. I've written 36 or 30, I think. Not sure that this one isn't, that's just come out. I've just got
to. Do you want to plug that one? Go on.
Oh, why? Am I allowed to?
Of course you are.
Oh, I'd love to. Well, it's
called, an excuse for coming on the show, isn't it?
It is. Bedtime Stories, which is published by Pavilion. And they're my stories and Terry Jones' stories. You remember Monty Python and Terry Jones?
Of course. Yeah.
And they're 7 bedtime stories for young children of about 5, 6, 7. And illustrated by Michael Foreman, who's one of our best illustrators. And both Terry and I write in a slightly mad, quirky way. And so they dovetail together rather well. So I'm rather thrilled with it because I think it's a nice production. It came out last week. And I hope a lot of people will be reading to their children and reading from my book. Don't you think it's important that people read to their children about it?
Very much so.
I think it's something that's disappearing a bit, and I think it's sad because, you know, they say that the standard of literacy is going down all the time. Children don't want to read. And yet there are so many wonderful books out there. And if you don't hook them on reading at a very early age, they're going to miss out on one of the great joys of life, because reading is such a wonderful pleasure. You can do it anywhere in the world at any time. And... not to love books, I think, is really rather sad. So anything one can do to encourage children.
I was thrilled a year or two ago to be invited back to my primary school just to read to the children one day.
Oh, did you?
And I loved it. It was wonderful.
Yes.
Yeah.
And children are wonderful to read to in that. Because
that's right.
You know, don't you, if you're going down well, because they sit and they're rapt and they're watching. As soon as they start to say, oh, can you, pick their nose or drift off, you think, oh, you've lost them.
This show is called John Hannah Meets. And you've had a chat show called Newman Meets, haven't you?
Yes, I did. Yes.
That was on, CFN, wasn't it?
Yes. It was really a half an hour chat show, just sitting as we are now, just talking to somebody for half an hour. And it was all people like that were connected with food. It would be Terence Conran, Nigella Lawson, Gary Rhodes, all the sort of those people. I did about 40 of those. And I think they turned out rather well. And, you know, it's quite a luxury, isn't it, to have half an hour's chat with somebody who you find very interesting. It's a wonderful thing to be able to do on television, because other than Michael Parkinson and maybe a couple of other people, I don't know who's doing it at the moment, but that type of interviewing has disappeared, and we now go in for very jokey, send-up-ish, make you laugh, not really find out much about the person type of interviewing, where the person who's interviewing you is the star of the show.
Yes, I'm not quite happy with those shows, are you?
No, well, they have their place, but they are out to make themselves look great, and very often you've got on the show and you end up looking ridiculous because you've become their foil. And sure, that's fine to have those, but I think we've got to keep on with the other programmes as well, so that we find out about people, find out interesting things.
Now, my clock on here on the tape recorder says 24 minutes 26. Now, yes. You've got a cake in the oven.
Yes.
Do you want to... I mean, we're within 5 minutes of finishing, but do you want to go and sort your cake out?
Do you know, I perhaps ought to, don't you think? Otherwise, it's divorce.
Can you spare me 5 minutes after you've taken the cake out?
I can.
John Hannam, can't cook, won't cook, but what a sexy voice.
So how was the cake?
Perfect.
Was it?
Absolutely perfect timing. Yes.
I want to talk about ads. You've done a few ads in your time, haven't you?
I've done... I did, well, as you know, I think it must be about 13 or 14 years of the Fairy Liquid ad.
Yes.
Which is a long time.
Do you get fed up when people say, oh, you're the Fairy Liquid lady?
Well,
do you get fed up?
They do say that a lot. Or are you going to wash up? Or let me look at your hands or something. But it kind of goes with the job. I mean, if you do an ad that becomes popular, that's part and parcel. I always remember Nigel Hawthorne saying to me that he'd just done The Madness of King George. And he'd also done an ad for some car. And he said, you know, people come up and say, oh, I thought you were terrific. And he's thinking, oh, they've seen The Madness of King George. They say, loved the ad you do for a car. So it's unavoidable, that.
What would you like to do now, then? You're a successful writer, actress. What else would you like to do?
Well, I'd like to continue writing. I've sort of tried to branch out a bit more in writing. I've done what I hoped would be a television programme on Madame de Pompadour, but so far nobody has taken it up. I've also tried to write a television play. So I don't know, maybe one day that somebody will like those. I really would like to continue doing lots of things. I enjoy presenting programmes on television. I don't really act anymore, because I think when you get to my age, you're either in that league of really brilliant actresses, which we have many who are in this rather ancient age group, and we really have to be, or you have to be, in order to survive, like a Judi Dench or a Maggie Smith, somebody like that, and in the theatre. And I was never that good. I was very lucky. I had one or two good things and one or two bad things, but I was never in that really superb league. And I think that's the only way that you can continue. And when you can't continue in that area, I think you have to say, well, it was all great while it lasted. I was very lucky. And start to move in other directions. But I never want to give up or retire, because I think, I don't know whether you'd agree, because you're in a job where you probably don't want to retire. You know, it's nice to have
don't.
A holiday and do that, but don't want to give up everything. So I shall continue, hopefully, doing things and hope there'll all be different kinds of things.
I get into trouble because when I go on holiday, I take a tape recorder with me, you know.
Yes, you see. Busman's holiday, yes. Isn't it?
Nanette, thank you so much for talking to me at very short notice. And I'm glad the cake's come out okay.
Thank you very much. You're very good at timing.
And good luck in the future.
By Jove! Ha ha ha! How tattyfalarious, folks. How discomnocorating to listen to that wonderful programme full of rumpunky nonsense. John Hannam Meets. Good gracious me.
Grateful thanks to Nanette Newman. Today you've listened to an archive interview I did with her right back in 2003. Thank you so much for listening to another John Hannam podcast, and you can go to any of the leading podcast sites where over 100 interviews are available to listen to. These include Anchor, Apple, Breaker, Castbox, Google Podcasts, Overcast, Pocket Casts, Radio Public, Spotify, Stitcher, and Copy RSS. And don't forget my website, johnhannam.com, for other interview details and how you might purchase my books online. Bye-bye for now.
Sweet man. Who was he again, dear?
John.
John.
Yes.
Yes, John.
Just John.
Hannam. Was it?
Yes.
Yes.
Exactly.
Yes. What does he do?
He talks to people like you and me, dear.
Oh, I see. Mm. Yes.